My name is David Nelson. This is my first session at Holden Village. It's my first time at Holden Village. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, and I work at the American Lutheran Church Division for World Mission Interchurch Cooperation. I'm called an area secretary, and that means really I am responsible for the liaison between the American Lutheran Church and other Christian churches in two areas of the world, Latin America and the Middle East. This week, our five sessions will be directed to that part of the world that we know as Latin America. And we will be attempting to learn and to get to know that part of the world, as we will also the opportunities for Christian ministry and mission from the viewpoint of the United States of America, and because of who I am, also from the viewpoint of Lutherans in the United States. We hope to learn about Lutherans in Latin America, but also about some of the issues and the problems that face the people of Latin America, and how this relates to our Christian faith, and how we, as Christians, relate to these issues. I chose as a title for this first session, Learning from Latin America. Now, to learn and to know go hand in hand. We need to know in order that we may continue to learn, and we need to learn in order that we may know. We don't often think of Latin America in the terms of learning from it. Or if we do, it's the kind of learning that we could call informational, find out things about Latin America. But what we want to do in this session, in this week, is deeper, and to not only find out information, but also to experience, although it be in a very indirect way. I'm not even a Latin American, you see, so everything that comes from me is secondhand already, so that we can experience something of Latin America and continue to experience as we leave Holden Village, and then reflect on it as it relates to our everyday existence. It's something like getting to know Holden Village. You hear about Holden Village from a brother or a sister or a friend who's visited, spent some time here. You know something about Holden Village, but it's certainly not as much knowledge as when you actually come here and experience it and live it and feel it and see it and touch. That's another stage of knowing, and I would wish that you could have that experience in knowing Latin America. Now, that might mean a trip to Latin America someday, might mean getting acquainted with a Latin American in your own community or seeking out some other contact. But there's another level, I suppose, even in our experience with Holden Village, and that will be the reflection on those experiences as we leave the place and return to our homes. And so the experience and the knowledge of Holden Village is not something that, you know, is here today and gone tomorrow, but that continues to influence our lives. And I would hope that that would be our ultimate goal as we seek to know more about Latin America and experience Latin America, that it be a continual thing constantly in our minds and in our thoughts. I have a map of the world before us. This map may look a little strange at first glance. It's a new map, as it were. The man who devised this map is a German cartographer by the name of Peters. It's called the Peters projection. And unlike some other projections of the world, it does place the equator in the center of this rectangle. And it also presents the continents in a fresh, in a new form and figure, partially mainly because the cartographer wished to show the land masses in their proper relationship and perspective. It's interesting because all of a sudden, the United States of America is not in the center of the world, as it so often is when we look at a Mercator map. And so everything else relates to where we are, and although we're not in the middle of the world, the old projection helps us to form that false impression, and the Peter's projection reminds us that we're off, not really in a corner in one sense, but that we are a small part of the world. Perhaps we're not so important and so unique as we sometimes believe. Now, Latin America is a term that needs some definition. When I was in Brazil, and my family and I lived in Brazil for 8 years, I was a pastor of the Evangelical Church of the Lutheran Confession in Brazil. And since I was sent out to that church by the American Lutheran Church, I was, at least in the United States, I was known as a missionary. I was a pastor in Brazil, and I remember saying, in answer to a question in the Portuguese language, you know, what are you? Because I suppose my accent gave it away that I was a foreigner. I said, sou americano, I'm an American. And the other guy just looked me straight in the eye and said, somos todos americanos, we're all Americans. You from the north and we from the south. It didn't say too much to him to say that he was American. And it's true. The green continent on the left of our world map is the Americas. And the people in Brazil, they don't talk about two continents, North America and South America. They talk about one continent. And we could talk about the geography of North and South and Central, but there is another way to look at Latin America and to look at America. I better correct myself, to look at America as four historic zones. A Colombian sociologist and writer by the name of Germán Arciniegas has divided the Americas into four categories, four zones. The first zone he refers to as the Hispano-Indian America. That would be the Spanish-speaking Latin America that begins perhaps even within our own country in the Southwest. 20 republics from north to south, and which have a very close tie to the Spanish colonization. Then there's the second category, the Portuguese America, which is the nation of Brazil. Brazil does not use the Spanish language, but rather Portuguese, because it was colonized by the Portuguese. No other country in Latin America uses Portuguese, although our Portuguese-speaking people in Rhode Island and Florida and in some other parts of South America, and other parts of the world, of course. Brazil is about half of the South America portion of our continent and is about one-third of the population that we generally refer to as Latin America. I think I should really say that I use the term Latin America to refer to the countries that begin at our southern border, Mexico and Cuba, and on south. Sometimes it includes all of the Caribbean, sometimes only a part of the Caribbean. But it is a general acceptable term, even in Latin America itself. The third category is the English America, which is the United States of America, and the fourth category, the Anglo-French America, which is Canada. As you know, America is a word that comes from the name of the explorer Amerigo Vespucci. And he gave his name not only to our country, but really to this whole continent. And the other countries didn't take that as their national name, as we did. The United States is a little incomplete because there were republics that called themselves United States of Brazil, United States of Mexico, United States of Venezuela. We alone used the word for the whole new world as part of our name. So that's why the Brazilian who told me we're all Americans was not wrong. And it's good to be reminded of that. The relationship that we have with Latin America is that of a north-south relationship. We may even express it in terms of down there. And when we look at a globe, the northern hemisphere is on top and the southern hemisphere is on the bottom. Now, sometimes we might even jump to a conclusion that there is some inherent reason why that has to be so, but I guess those who made maps and those who constructed globes were in the northern hemisphere, and so the southern hemisphere to us is distant. It's to the south. We often think more in terms of east and west as far as our relationship to other nations than we do in terms of north and south. And yet, if you divide the world into north and south, we may not choose to divide it at the equator, but if we choose to divide it so that the top third of the world, in our terms of reference, stands by itself, it includes the West, it includes Europe, it includes the East, the Soviet Union. The remaining two-thirds of the world has also two-thirds of the world's population. And yet we often call them the third world, but that reference to the third world could not be a reference to either size or population, since it's really then, you would have to say, the two-thirds world. And so the third world is a term that's not being used much anymore. It's a word that continues to appear, as does also an expression for the nations in this two-thirds world in the South, the LDCs. We reduce them to three letters, lesser developed countries. And sometimes we refer to them as underdeveloped countries or developing countries. But we should seek to find a name as neutral as possible. And I think the South and the North do that for us. I also feel comfortable in talking about Latin America using the word or the phrase our southern neighbors, because the word neighbor is one that we identify with very easily in our own community. It also has a strong biblical base. And I think we understand and we realize that we can learn from our neighbors. And we can experience life together with our neighbors. Our Latin American neighbors, in many ways, are unknown to us. Many times we will find a Latin American living in our community as an exchange student or someone who has migrated to the north. But our experience in the area of travel and commerce and the like has not generally been directed in that direction. So let me just say a few words about our Latin American neighbors. The Latin American reality is that of an industrialization in process, a exodus from the rural areas of that part of the world into the cities, migration, uprooting at a very rapid pace, so that today two-thirds of Latin Americans live in cities. It was only 20 years ago that only half of Latin Americans lived in cities. But this industrialization is continuing on a very rapid, at a very rapid rate. This means that as the urban centers grow in size, that the population is becoming increasingly marginalized. I need to explain that term perhaps because I think it's understandable when it's translated from either Spanish or Portuguese, but perhaps not quite as clear as I'd like it to be. Marginalized, I guess I would explain it as those who live on the outskirts, on the edge of society, not really fully integrated into the urban center. They're on the fringe, economically, socially, and do not participate in the full sense in the life of the city and the life of the nation. They are poor, they are either unemployed or underemployed, meaning that the job they have is not adequate, does not provide them with sufficient income for a satisfactory standard of living. These are the marginalized people, and they make up a great percentage of the population in the urban centers in Latin America. I think you know, as an example, that Mexico City has 17 million people and that it's the fastest growing city in the world, and you know it won't be many years until it'll have 30 million. Those kind of figures we don't really comprehend them. They're too great. But that would be a city where people coming in from the rural areas and seeking a better life, seeking a job, hoping that things will get better for them if they make the move, and most often that doesn't happen. It's a consequence, however, of a decision by many governments in Latin America to industrialize and to create jobs and use foreign capital to produce those jobs. So they are encouraging this, even though officially they would also make propaganda to keep the people at their roots in the rural areas, so they might also increase their agricultural production. But analyzing it carefully, they are not able to use the number of people living in the rural areas for the kind of agriculture that they're introducing, namely highly mechanized modern agriculture. It needs fewer hands for the harvest, not more. And so the people are leaving the rural areas and arriving in the cities generally untrained for the jobs that could conceivably be found there. Another characteristic of our Latin American neighbors, I refer not just to the people but to the nations, would be that of producer of raw materials for the developed countries of the nations. That's been the case ever since gold and silver were shipped back to Spain in the early days after the discovery of the New World. And it continues as we drink our daily coffee, sugar, lumber, agricultural products, during the war, rubber, and the like. We have used them as our source of raw materials, and we have not been eager in the north, in the developed part of the world, to accept exports or imports from Latin America that are already finished. We prefer to do that here, unless, of course, by taking advantage of a less expensive labor cost, we might consent to the assembling of certain products in Latin America. Another characteristic is that Latin America is a continent in revolution, and that's not taken lightly. It's really true. There's a case to be made for the fact that the political revolution of the 18th century in most part of the world and the social revolutions of the 19th century are at the present time all happening together with a cultural revolution in Latin America. So that from one part of Latin America to the other, there are hints of revolution, not only violent armed revolution of attempting to overthrow governments, but a revolution which reaches into every community and transforms it and changes it drastically from one generation to the other. Another characteristic is that Latin America is growing at a rapid rate. The population estimated today at about 360 million, and I'm referring then to the Hispano-America and Hispano-Indian America and the Portuguese America, 360 million, increasing at an average population growth rate of 3%. That means that if the crowded conditions in the cities of Latin America are bad today, they will be worse tomorrow. And in addition to the population rate, we can expect that the exodus from the rural areas to the city will also continue. This means that the population is very young. You can find varying statistics on this, but I think I would hit it pretty close by using this one. 49% of Latin Americans are under 15 years of age, almost half under 15. And if we were going to say under 17, under 19, it would be the overwhelming majority. Some countries would be different, but this is an average statistic that is used. You see it on the streets of Latin America. You see it in the cities, those who are working, the clerical positions, the factories. You see it in the rural areas. You see it in the churches. Half of the people, 15 years of age or younger. The death rate among the older people, okay, I don't have a statistic about the death rate, but I can say something about life expectancy. The life expectancy for Latin Americans has been improving, increasing, but it does vary from 45 years in Haiti, in Honduras, to up to 70 years in the nations of the southern cone of South America, namely Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay. Those nations have increased the life expectancy, and other nations have improved it as well, but it is still perhaps much below ours, and contributes, the improving of it contributes to the population growth, undoubtedly. But it is still not where it should be, so that efforts need to continue to be made in improving the life expectancy, which is a factor then in the rate of growth. As they reach a retirement age?
No, I mean, no.
For our own people here in the United States?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sort of
yes. I would assume that every government in Latin America has an excellent program for the social benefits for the poor and the landless and the elderly, to a lesser extent to the unemployed. But it remains in many places on paper a very fine program, but without funding, which would mean that it doesn't mean a real help at the time when it's most needed. Inflation, I think, is a worldwide phenomenon. I suppose that I can show you figures from Latin America that, you know, far exceed what we understand inflation to be. It's not only from, let's say, some of the monetary policies that they have adopted. It's also from the whole economic order of this world. We talk about 10%, 12% inflation. In Brazil, that's what it is too, except that it's per month and not per year. The death rate among children, it certainly is high in the slums and the favelas, which is a Portuguese word for slum, in the urban centers of Latin America. But I suppose the life expectancy is is also reduced by the fact that people, through the kind of labor that they have to do for their living, they age much quicker, and the conditions under which they work. One statistic was that the tin miners, we're in a mining area here, we read about how this was, you know, just a fine example of a mining community. And yet, the opposite is also true in our own country and in Latin America. 32 years was the life expectancy, and continues to be the life expectancy of a tin miner in Bolivia. No, I suppose you're correct in assuming that that Latin America has always been a young continent in that sense. Yeah. I don't know if it has changed. I would think that it has changed. I think that it has increased, that there are there's a greater percentage of young people today than earlier. Well, birth control would be a factor. As you know, we haven't talked about the religious makeup of the Latin American people, but it is very strong Roman Catholic. And in the last 2 years, the Pope has visited Mexico and Brazil, and he has spoken out against artificial means of birth control. And undoubtedly has is a very strong factor. It would also, I should also say that not all Latin Americans follow the Pope's lead, and even among certain bishops, there would be the tacit understanding that birth control is necessary for the future of their existence in Latin America. Let me go on to speak about the people, especially in their racial composition. Latin Americans are multiracial. They reflect the blood of three continents. In the first place, the original population of the New World, the Aboriginals, or the misnamed Indians, as we know them, have been very strong and represent a significant factor in the racial makeup of Latin Americans, especially in Guatemala, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia, where they seem to be in the majority as far as their numbers are concerned. Even in Mexico, 20% of Mexicans are of this Aboriginal origin. In many other parts of Latin America, they are smaller in numbers, threatened with extinction in some parts, especially because of the advances in civilization and progress of colonization in the Amazon basin, which is not only a part of Brazil but also Colombia and Venezuela, Peru and Ecuador, as smaller Indian tribes retreat from settlers who are being channeled into these areas by the governments. And they may be small in numbers there, but it is important to note that they are being exposed to not only the diseases, as we would expect, but also to the materialism and to the evils of our societies, and are threatened, and are, whether they be the more exotic names or whether in past times you will recall names like the Maya and the Azteca, today are in the majority. A third continent contributing to the makeup of the Latin American people is the European continent, principally Spanish, Portuguese, but also Italian, French, Germans, and Polish. The southern countries, as mentioned, those with a higher life expectancy are also those that have the highest percentage of European immigrants: Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, Brazil, about 60% to a lesser degree. Brazil is, as I say, a half a continent, and so we can't generalize and use the Latin America statistics for Brazil, but very strong European immigration in Brazil, and to a lesser extent, Venezuela. A lot of the other countries, most of the other countries, it has only been one of the factors and not the principal factor. In addition, there are the mixtures, the mestizos, the intermarriage between these races, and also the Asiatics, the Japanese, the Korean, and the Chinese. And the last characteristic that I'll mention is that of the social class. The ruling or elites, those who are in charge, those who maintain the greatest percentage of wealth in Latin America, really comprise only 2% of the population. And the middle class, which is a term that we understand very well here in the U.S., it's not really fair to think in terms of middle class in South America, and yet there is about 15% of the population who I suppose would fit into that category. It has not been increasing as some theories of development would like us to believe would happen. The people's the percentage of the people affected by the progress and development through the trickle-down theory have not increased significantly. So one could even say that the middle class is dwindling now, and it really only exists in those countries of the southern cone. The 80% in the lower classes, the workers, the campesinos, the laborers, the rural farm workers, and then the marginalized populations in those urban centers that we talked about earlier. That's just an introduction to Latin America, its geography. We haven't touched much on history. I think you know that the Spanish and the Portuguese colonizers divided South America. That's why Brazil today stands apart from its neighbors in the use of the Portuguese language. We talked about the makeup of the people. But to get to my theme this morning about learning from Latin America, I start off from the basic premise that we need each other, we need to learn from each other. That is true for us as a nation and as a people. That we need to gain new perspectives and to see our weaknesses and strengths as others see them. We need to discover the diversity and the richness of God's universal gifts to his people and his creatures, wherever they may be, and that God in his wisdom created all peoples and cultures, that we are not at the center of the universe. So I think we can learn from Latin America. We very seldom think of that, Latin America in those terms. We would rather think in terms of what can we contribute, what can we do for Latin America, what can we give, what can we, how can we aid or assist them. But I'm asking the question, what can we learn? Now, I've mentioned enough so that to say that many Latin Americans are poor should be no surprise. That many Latin Americans live in poverty and in dire circumstances, even in misery. And let me ask you a question. Can any of you remember a time in your life when you considered yourself poor? I see there you were poor and you didn't know it. How were there any of you who were poor and thought you were poor and knew you were poor? Some of you too. Okay. What can you remember about yourselves from that time in your life? What was it like? Where are you going to get your next meal? One other contribution here. You had lots of company because your friends were poor. So there was a lot of social interaction with your neighbors and family. Any other responses? Frustration, feelings of inferiority. Okay. Somebody else remember what it was like? You worked together. You worked hard. Was life easy? No. Was it Was it satisfying? Could be. Sure, sod house in Canada. A large number of children. Okay. You considered yourself poor. You were poor. And yet there were so many things that shaped your life as it is today. Would you be able to go back into your personal history and say that what you are today partially comes from that time in your life? A lot of it. Excuse me? Okay, so you, in spite of the despairing situation, there was enough there that you became self-reliant, you mentioned pride, you had you knew that others were in the same situation, and so you were creative, you made the best of it. And love was there. Okay. Lack of envy. Yeah. Well, I'm asking these questions here now because I've said we want to learn from Latin Americans, and I've said that Latin Americans are generally poor, and I just wanted to show you through this exercise that you can learn from poor people, that you yourself learned from being poor, and that even as a rich nation or as now someone who doesn't no longer consider himself poor, you might be able still to learn from those who are poor. Just let me mention a few things. In the area of personal communication, I believe it was mentioned, always a lot of company. People got together a lot. Latin Americans do that. They're together a lot in their neighborhoods, in their communities, in their families. And not only are they together, but they're very open with one another. They're very free in their relationships. You know, when they greet someone, they don't stand around and wonder whether they should put one hand in one pocket or one hand behind the back. I mean, they put their arms around each other and they embrace each other. And they greet one another in that way. And it's certainly not the case where you just embrace a complete stranger. But when you're with friends, then you're free to show your love, your friendship, and your care for another person by touching them. And that's something that we have a little difficulty with here in North America. So, that's one thing. Any of you who saw the film, Excuse Me, America, on Sunday morning, maybe saw some of that, you know, as the Latin Americans greeted one another. And they greeted one another warmly, openly, through a hug or an embrace. The other thing about the personal communication or the personal aspect is the joy and the laughter and the celebration. And I don't think I'll ever forget, I hadn't seen this film of Don Helder Camara before either, you know. As he was introduced there and there was some music, you know, he couldn't refrain from stomping his feet and moving his body and just becoming a part of that music. Music is very much a part of the Latin American personality. And the good humor and the hospitality, another area. You know, you've heard the expression, Yankee go home. And yet, I would like to wager that if you would take the time to go to Latin America and visit people and families, you would shake your head at the way you would be received into their homes, and they would share whatever they have, whether it's a lot or a little, how they would be glad to have you there and get to know you and to open themselves up and to you. Their hospitality exceeds the already fine hospitality that I think the North American people have. And we can learn from that. We can learn from their understanding of community and their dependence on one another. When times are tough, you know you can't do it alone. And so you depend on one another, on members of your own family and on other members in the community. You know, that's what Don Helder Camara meant in his expression of sharing a dream. You know, one man, one person dreaming alone, remains a dream. But when you share that dream, as he expressed with his hands and his gestures, which is another characteristic of the Latin American people that we can learn from, he wanted to show how it's together things can change and things can happen. Let me tell you a story. I think we've got time. About two truck drivers in Colombia, and I didn't witness this firsthand, but I heard it from a witness. They were traveling on these mountain roads to go up in outside of Bogota, and two trucks on this very narrow road passed too close to one another, and they sideswiped each other. But they were going at slow speeds, and so they didn't go off the road. They simply ground to a halt, but they blocked the road, and there wasn't any place to get around them in on one side or the other. And of course, they got out and very fiery determination started accusing the other of being the fault for this accident. And they started to argue and started to demand payment for the damages, as I suppose is natural when you think you've been wronged. And this argument went on, and the cars started piling up in both directions. And pretty soon there was a long line, and the people got out of the cars, and they came up there, and they witnessed this confrontation. And this went on for 30 minutes, an hour and a half, and it was over 2 hours before a solution was arrived at. And this solution was not, it wasn't what you might expect, that they finally agreed to each pay for their own. The people who were gathered around there took up a collection. And they paid off the drivers, and the drivers went their way. Look to the community resources. Well, another area we can learn from Latin America is their attitudes toward death. They are very secure in their knowledge that life is a precious gift. And they also know that it can be a very short gift. Now they are just as interested in staying alive as we are. And yet, when death comes, there is something about the acceptance of death and the way they handle grief, which is it's just fascinating and encouraging to see. It partially comes the whole process of grief and is accentuated because, at least in Brazil, because there's very little or no embalming, funerals must take place within 24 hours of death. But when someone dies in a family, you know, the whole neighborhood stops until that person is buried. Everybody drops what they're doing, leaves the fields and the harvests, and they go to the home of the family that lost this member, and they bring them food, and they gather around, and they just fill up not only the house but the yard and the whole area, and in effect just wait it out and sit with the family members in their grief. And then they accompany the family members to the graveside, and they bury the dead, and they shovel in the dirt, and they cover it up, the grave, and then they go away. Now, I've been away from the United States enough so that I'm not really sure how it works here, but I have a feeling that the 3 or 4 days and the chapel, the going to the chapel, the mortuary chapel, and often the graveside service is over and the coffin is still above ground and everybody goes away and the burial is actually done at a different time. At least that's the way I understand it. But I found it very important to learn from the Latin Americans. Death is something real. You can't escape it. There's no use hiding from it. But let's face it. And let's face it together as a community. Another place to learn from Latin Americans is their basic tenet of hope and courage. You mentioned, you know, love was always there when you reflect on those days. Well, I think if there's one word that can describe the Latin Americans, the poor of Latin America, it's that they don't give up hope.
They have an expression in Brazil, a esperança é a última que morre. Hope is the last thing to die. And they hang on to that. And it really is not just a polite phrase. It's really part of their life. And I think we can share in that because we know we want things to be better for our children and for our children's children. And that's true of the poor in the favelas and in the slums and the barrios of Latin America. They don't have it very good right now. And there's revolution on one hand, and there's lack of education, and there's short life expectancy, and a high death rate among, a mortality rate among children. And their nation is not able to get a handle on inflation, but hope is very difficult to eliminate in Latin America. Some people would see that when that gets carried to an extreme, that it can be damaging, you know, contentment or resignation to what they have, that it will never get better, but at least, you know, we have this. I think they are satisfied in some sense, and yet they are not content to live that life either. They have their eyes and their hearts focused on a better way of life if they are among the poor. Latin Americans are very wise about criticism. They have good insights into problems. And they have a unique ability to point to some of our problems and to show us some of our mistakes, some of our problems. The whole idea of raising one's consciousness is a concept that arose out of Brazil. Consciousness raising through the teacher Paulo Freire is one of the important contributions that Latin Americans have made to us in our century. I'm going to talk the rest of the week about Latin America, so I better wrap it up for here. I'm just going to mention one more, and that is we can learn from Latin Americans in their basic tenet that faith in God and the expression of that faith in deeds and acts are very closely bound together. In fact, they are one. There isn't too much problem with this whole division of the spiritual side of life and then the physical dimension of life. But for Latin Americans, life is one whole. And holistic ministry and understanding the gospel in that holistic sense, that it the mission of the church needs to speak to our relationship to God and needs to speak to our relationship to our fellow human beings is something that is accepted very naturally by Latin Americans. We struggle with it. We fight it. And I think we can learn from Latin Americans that it really is the basis of our Christian faith. Some of the people that we'll talk about this week, Adolfo Perez Esquivel, the latest Nobel Peace Prize winner, a Roman Catholic layperson, a committed Christian from Argentina. We'll be mentioning in connection with the Wednesday presentation, Archbishop Romero, the martyr, the Roman Catholic Archbishop who was killed as he was celebrating Mass in El Salvador. We'll speak of Evaristo Arns, the Cardinal Arns of São Paulo, Brazil, who, because Dom Helder Câmara, the Archbishop of Recife, is getting older and is retreating a little bit from the international scene and from the local national scene, Cardinal Arns has taken the lead in the side of the church. For the church on the side of the poor. We'll be looking at one session on the Lutherans in Latin America and their contribution to the witness of Christ on their own continent. We'll be looking at the struggle in Central America, although it's from someone who's never been there, and it's through reading and contact, really. That will be on Wednesday, tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock in Koinonia. We'll be relating more to Brazil, the country that I know best, and then the Lutherans on Thursday, and then some words about liberation theology at the grassroots on Friday. Not theological explanation, but how that works itself out in practice among the communities and among the lay persons in Latin America. We have a few minutes, according to my watch, about 5 minutes, that I'd like to entertain some questions. Okay, the question about what can we contribute, what can we as North Americans do in as we understand better the situation? You know, do we just take this in, or is there something that we can put into action? Well, I could maybe say a word to that. I don't like to ask that question too early on until we have a base. As an example of what we can't do, John Schramm handed me a letter this morning from someone who had written him and asked if he knew of any place in Latin America where he and his wife could go and work. One is an elementary school teacher and one is a nurse. They would like to live for a year in Latin America and work and do something. You know, that's really tough. I don't know of any place. In the first place, the governments of Latin America say we give these jobs to those who are, you know, to those of us of our own country, you know, and we have nurses and teachers, and I suppose we could say, well, you don't have enough, but the fact is that for the jobs that are there, they have enough. There are always people prepared to step into a job if there's one available. Secondly would be a problem of visas and difficulty in getting permission to live in a country. We don't let people come in our country very easily, and in some Latin American countries they say if anybody requires a visa of our citizens, we will also require a visa of their citizens. And so that's a problem. There are some volunteer opportunities, but they are rare. I suppose your question doesn't only refer to going to Latin America. So I would think that there is much we could do, you know, in our own congregations, in our own communities. There's much we could do in our relationship to the United States foreign policy over against Latin America and the different Latin America countries. Perhaps that is our first responsibility. But I'm not going to get into that today because we just don't have time. The other thing would be in the area of our the ministry and the mission of our church as it relates to Latin America. The church can have a very important role to play. I was fortunate to be a part of that. At the present time, most of the Lutheran relationship with other Lutheran churches in Latin America is through parish pastors, but there are other opportunities that arise, although less frequently. The foreign mission presence in Latin America is very strong, but in the Lutheran churches it is less so. Yeah, you see that distinction between immigrants and nationals is disappearing very rapidly. I mean, if I asked, you know, each one of you, where do you come from, you know, you'd probably say, I come from Sequim or wherever it is, or St. Paul. Few of you might say, well, my grandfather came from Norway or Germany or something. But those distinctions are disappearing in our society, and they're disappearing in Latin America. Most of the Lutherans in Latin America can trace in their family some relationship to a European immigrant. That I think most Lutherans in North America can do the same. I think that's changed. I think it's no longer true, as you mentioned, that people in a given strata of society are just going to stay there and aren't going to make any move to change it. That's what I meant when I said, you know, there is a real revolution going on. It's not an armed revolution in an armed camp, but even where there is peace, there is still that kind of revolution where those people are saying, you know, is this our lot? Is this what we were created to be in God's image? And is this, you know, the fullness of life and the abundance of life? Are we being treated fairly? Is there justice in our land? And if not, what can we do to change it? Those are the questions that are being raised. So, I mean, certainly you would find people who through the centuries have been oppressed and beaten down, who find it difficult to take that step, but more and more they're making it. One more question. Exactly. Ever since World War II, the use of foreign languages in Latin America has been reduced considerably, and the national languages have been very strongly imposed, and so my work in Brazil was in Portuguese. Now, I did meet some people in those Lutheran churches that I served who didn't understand Portuguese as well as they understood the language their mother taught them, which in this case was German. So I would find myself speaking German to some of those parishioners and even conducting German service, especially communion for the sick and the elderly. But that's changing from one year to the next so rapidly that I suppose within 10 years, you know, there'll be an occasional service in German, but nothing on a regular basis. Portuguese is the language in the Amazon region. There are certainly Indian tribes that don't use Portuguese, but they're learning it. In some of the other nations, in Bolivia, there are Indian languages that are very strong. Okay, we have to go. Thank you very much.